Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about part 3, chapter 9. Levin would be happiest doing his own farmy things. What are your predictions for Levin? Swim said the mama fishy said, my prediction. I predict Levin is going to continue on with farmy things and we will learn about them at length in a beautiful lyrical prose, I hope. I predict for us, we will be regaled with numerous chapters detailing for us ongoing interactions between Levin and Kitty. Wishful thinking, I think, there, Swim said the mama fishy. Levin continuing doing farmy things and we will learn about them at length in beautiful lyrical prose. Might I recommend some Walt Whitman to you? Leaves of Grass. Is that what it's called? Leaves of Grass? I think that's right. If you want some nice, poetic, lyrical, idyllic prose, then all of those adjectives would definitely describe Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. Oh my God, did you hear how many of the words I just tried to say that I didn't say correctly? That's because it's late and I'm tired. Oh, there it is. Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass. It's on my bookshelf. The 1855 edition. Page 1. I'm trying to find some of the poem. I celebrate myself and what I assume you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. Houses and rooms are full of perfumes. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it and like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The atmosphere is not a perfume. It has no taste of the distillation. It is odorless. It is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it. I will go to the bank by the wood and become undisguised and naked. I am mad for it to be in contact with me. The smoke of my own breath echoes, ripples, and buzzed whispers. Love root, silk thread, crotch, and vine. My respiration and inspiration, the beating of my heart, the passing of blood and air through my lungs, the sniff of green leaves and dry leaves, and of the shore and dark-coloured sea rocks and of hay in the barn, the sound of the belched words of my voice, words loosed to the eddies of the wind, a few light kisses, a few embraces, a reaching around of arms, the play of shine and shade on the trees as the supple boughs wag, the delight alone or in the rush of the streets or along the fields and hillsides, the feeling of health, the full noon trill, the song of me rising from bed and meeting the sun. There you go, that was just for you, Swim, said the mama fishy. Because I don't think you're going to get your beautiful lyrical prose in farmy things in this book. So, Walt Whitman to the rescue. That was nice, actually. I should read that book. Sluggy, with 3 G's, said, this chapter actually made me intensely sad. Chin up, buddy. That's no good. Levin's easy manner with both Dolly and the children made me think, what if, in regards to their relationship, Dolly is stuck with an absent husband who doesn't love her, and Levin is lonely and longs for the family life they have. Levin has by now set his sights on Kitty, but back in part 1, chapter 6, we were told that during his student years he had almost fallen in love with Dolly, the eldest, but she was soon married off to Oblonsky. Knowing what we do about both characters, it's hard not to think that they might both be happier if they ended up together. Perhaps people change, though, so who knows if they would be the same people at this point in their lives if that had happened, but it feels like a lost opportunity for happiness. Oh no, it's a love triangle. We've got already 2 love triangles. Tolstoy loves his love shapes, doesn't he? War and Peace had a frickin' love hexagon. And I'm a sucker for them too. As much as I hate them. As much as they're very Hunger Games, Twilight type things now, the old love triangle. Tolstoy does a good one. Techrific said, I'm glad we got to witness this merry, relaxed and childlike side of Levin. His effortless ease and comfort with the children reminded me of Alyosha in The Brothers Karamazov. For all his seriousness, his ability to tap into his inner child was great. Of course, his family bliss highlights his own longing for a family. I get the same energy from Levin, says I Am Norwegian. It's not often you encounter Alyosha-like characters, sadly. I Am Norwegian also said, soon we are getting a Levin, Dolly, and Kitty scene in the same place, and on Levin's home turf, no less. It's taking some self-control not to just read ahead. Yeah, that will be pretty cool to see them all together again in the room. Levin, Dolly, and Kitty. Oblonsky too, if he's around. You know, he can jump in. I don't think he'll be there, though. But, yeah, how cool would that be? Isn't it good the way that he can just have these characters and just make us want to see them in a room together talking just to see what would happen? Tolstoy, truly is quite good at the old writing of the books. Now, special little treat for you all. We have got... Simply Productive. I blanked for a second there on the username. Did I get that right? Simply Productive. Messages. Let me just double check. Yeah, Simply Productive has been awesome enough to record three chapters for us. And I was surprised to find that Simply Productive, I don't know why I assumed Simply Productive that you were a guy. I don't know why I assumed that. But then when I heard the chapter and I noticed that you were a woman, I was surprised. So, I don't know. I don't know why. There's like some Redditors on this subreddit who I know are guys, and there's some that I know are girls, and there's some that I know that I don't know whether they're a guy or a girl. And for some reason, I thought I knew that you were a guy. I thought I knew that, but apparently I did not. Anyway, thanks so much for reading three chapters for us. Now, this is part 3, chapter 10, as read by the lovely Simply Productive. Thanks, guys. I will see you tomorrow. Enjoy.
Hit recording.
Oh, right, meow.
Zoom out. If you want to. Do you want to?
Sit. Yeah.
Okay. And I will be quiet. There
you go. Thank you. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Simply Productive joining you from Canada. I've been worrying the whole night about what you guys are going to think of my accent, so I've been very sure to watch lots of Letterkenny in practice. And if you haven't watched that, you absolutely must, because it's a Canadian requirement. All right, so we'll just jump straight into it, shall we? We are reading Part 3, Chapter 10 of Anna Karenina. Kitty writes to me that there's nothing she longs for so much as quiet and solitude, Dolly said after the silence that had followed. And how is she? Better? Levin asked in agitation. Thank God, she's quite well again. I never believed her lungs were affected. Oh, I'm very glad, said Levin, and Dolly fancied she saw something touching, helpless in his face as he said this, and looked silently into her face. Let me ask you, Konstantin Dmitrievich, said Darya Alexandrovna, smiling her kindly and rather mocking smile. Why is it you are angry with Kitty? I'm not angry with her, said Levin. Yes, you are angry. Why is it you have not come to see us nor them when you were in Moscow? Darya Alexandrovna, he said, flushing up to the roots of his hair. I wonder really that with your kind heart you don't feel this. How is it you feel no pity for me, if nothing else, when you know... What do I know? You know I made an offer and that I was refused, said Levin. And all the tenderness that he had been feeling for Kitty a minute before was replaced by a feeling of anger for the slight he had suffered. What makes you suppose I know? Because everybody knows it. That's just where you are mistaken. I did not know it, though I had guessed it was so. Well, now you know it. All I knew was that something had happened that made her dreadfully miserable, and that she begged me never to speak of it. And if she would not tell me, she would certainly not speak of it to anyone else. But what did pass between you? Tell me. I have told you. When was it? when I was at their house last time. Do you know that? Said Darya Alexandrovna. I was awfully, awfully sorry for her. You suffer only from pride. Perhaps so, said Levin. But she interrupted him. But she, poor girl, I am awfully, awfully sorry for her. Now I see it all. Well, Darya Alexandrovna, you must excuse me, he said, getting up. Goodbye, Darya Alexandrovna, till we meet again. No, wait a minute, she said, clutching him by the sleeve. Wait a minute, sit down. Please, please, don't let us talk of this, he said, sitting down, and at the same time feeling rise up and stir within his heart a hope he had believed to be buried. If I did not like you, she said, and tears came into her eyes, if I did not know you, as I do know you. The feeling that had seemed dead revived more and more, rose up and took possession of all Levin's heart. Yes, I understand it all now, said Darya Alexandrovna. You can't understand it. For you men who are free and make your own choice, it's always clear whom you love. But a girl's in a possession of suspense, with all a woman's or maiden's modesty. A girl who sees you men from afar, who takes everything on trust. A girl may have, and often has, such a feeling that she cannot tell what to say. Yes, if the heart does not speak. No, the heart does speak, but just consider. You men have views about a girl. You come to the house, you make friends, you criticize. You wait to see if you have found what you love, and then when you are sure you love her, you make an offer. Well, that's not quite it. Anyway, you make an offer when your love is ripe or when the balance is completely turned between the two you are choosing from. But a girl is not asked. She is expected to make her choice, and yet she cannot choose. She can only answer yes or no. Yes, to choose between me and Vronsky, thought Levin, and the dead thing that had come to life within him, died again, and only weighed on his heart instead of aching. Darya Alexandrovna, he said, that's not how one chooses a new dress or some purchase or other. Sorry, that is how one chooses a new dress or some purchase of another, not love. The choice has been made, and so much the better, and there can be no repeating it. Ah, pride, pride, said Darya Alexandrovna, as though despising him for the basis of this feeling in comparison with that other feeling which only women know. At the time when you made Kitty an offer, she was just in a position in which she could not answer. She was in doubt between you and Vronsky. Him she was seeing every day, and you she had not seen for a long while. Supposing she had been older, I, for instance, in her place, could have felt no doubt. I always disliked him. And so it has turned out. Levin recalled Kitty's answer. She had said, no, that cannot be. Darya Alexandrovna, he said dryly, I appreciate your confidence, me. I believe you are making a mistake. But whether I'm right or wrong, the pride you so despise makes any thought of Katerina Alexandrovna out of the question for me. You understand? Utterly out of the question. I will only say one thing more. You know that I am speaking of my sister, whom I love as I love my own children. I don't say she cared for you. All I meant to say is that her refusal at that moment proves nothing. I don't know, said Levin, jumping up. If you only knew how you are hurting me, it's just as if a child of yours were dead, and they were to say to you, he could have been like this and like that, he might have lived, and how happy you would have been in him. But he's dead, dead, dead. How absurd you are, said Darya Alexandrovna, looking with mournful tenderness at Levin's excitement. Yes, I see it all more and more clearly, she went on musingly. So you won't come to see us, then, when Kitty's here? No, I shan't come. Of course, I won't avoid meeting Katerina Alexandrovna, but as far as I can, I will try to save her the annoyance of my presence. You are very, very absurd, repeated Darya Alexandrovna, looking with tenderness into his face. Very well, then. Let it be as though we had not spoken of this. What have you come for, Tanya? She said in French to the little girl who had come in. Where is my spade, Mama? I speak French, and you must too. The little girl tried to say it in French, but could not remember the French for spade. The mother prompted her, and then told her in French where to look for the spade, and this made a disagreeable impression on Levin. Everything in Darya Alexandrovna's house and children struck with him now as by no means so charming as a little while before. And what does she talk French with the children for, he thought. How unnatural and false it is, and the children feel it, learning French and unlearning sincerity, he thought to himself. Unaware that Darya Alexandrovna had thought all over that over 20 times already, and yet, even at the cost of some loss of sincerity, believed it necessary to teach her children French in that way. But why are you staying? Do stay a little. Why are you going? Do stay a little. Levin stayed to tea, but his good humor had vanished, and he felt ill at ease. After tea, he went out into the hall to order his horses to be put in. And when he came back, he found Darya Alexandrovna greatly disturbed, with a troubled face and tears in her eyes. While Levin had been outside, an incident had occurred which had utterly shattered all the happiness she had been feeling that day, and her pride in her children. Grisha and Tanya had been fighting over a ball. Darya Alexandrovna, hearing a scream in the nursery, ran in and saw a terrible sight. Tanya was pulling Grisha's hair while he, with a face hideous with rage, was beating her with his fists wherever he could get at her. Something snapped in Darya Alexandrovna's heart when she saw this. It was as if darkness had swooped in upon her life. She felt that these children of hers that she was so proud of were not only merely most ordinary, but positively bad, ill-bred children with coarse, brutal propensities, wicked children. She could not talk or think of anything else, and she could not speak to Levin of her misery. Levin saw she was unhappy and tried to comfort her, saying that it showed nothing bad, that all children fight. But even as he said it, he was thinking in his heart, "No, I won't be artificial and talk French with my children, but my children won't be like that. All one has to do is not spoil children, not to distort their nature, and they'll be delightful. No, my children won't be like that." He said goodbye and drove away, and she did not try to keep him. And that is chapter 30, or chapter, oh gosh, what number is that? Chapter 10. Mine's written in Roman numerals. It's not my fault. We didn't learn that in school. That's all, folks. We'll talk to you tomorrow.